Call the June 5th Public Safety and Correction Committee meeting to order. And Scott, would you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
We were just checking you out, Scott. Okay. Approval of the minutes from May 1st.
Motion, Potter.
Any additions or corrections? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion approved. Okay, we have the Village of
Join the meeting.
Mayor here. Mayor Sweet, right up here to the podium.
Alan Tatch, our police chief, is here as well. So
Mike's on.
Yep. I think I brought 8 copies of this presentation. So I think Nick and Alan have seen them.
Yes.
We'll pass them out to the committee. Maybe.
Thank you. The committee members are.
We have more, and we'll publish this electronically. Well, first of all, welcome. Thank you for hosting us. We appreciate it. We were here in this very room. It was probably about a year ago. Colin and I asked to meet with, I think it was just a few of the county legislators at the time, and discuss some of the issues that we're having. Sadly, we're a product of New York State's failed welfare system. And as a result of being the county seat, the Village of Bath faces unique problems that very few other communities have in Steuben County. We have a huge mental health business or a huge mental health office in our business district. And that really doesn't help trying to bring people into the downtown area. So what we were told after that meeting was to go out and gather some research, which we did. We held one-on-one meetings. We met with the Chamber of Commerce, and we had the police department craft data for us that we could come back here and say, these are our issues. This specifically is what we're asking for help with from the county. So if we go to the business district, our biggest concern, our biggest challenge here in downtown Bath is DSS placements. And specifically, they're being placed at the Old National Hotel in the Shannon building. These businesses are not requiring background checks, no rental agreements, and at the end of the day, they're profit centers. What's happening, and more so last year than I've ever seen before, is that they're harassing the people that are coming downtown. Chad a while had an incident where people, customers of theirs, had to throw their leftovers to flee harassment. Lake Country Jewelers had an individual in the front of their building digging up bricks and hugging them. Pizza Delight, Community Bank, report loitering, foul language, all day long. And the Chamber of Commerce has huge concerns for the business district downtown with these individuals. The nicer the weather gets, the more people that are located on Liberty Street, hanging out in the park, using the electric, smoking, and foul language there as well. The data that we collected over a 3-month period showed that 33% of every arrest in the village was a self-identified DSS individual. We think it's probably more at the 60 percentile, but they had to self-report with the questions that we asked them. We couldn't force anybody to give us any ID or anything of that nature. So that, in essence, is 40% of all of our time that the police department is spending is dealing with DSS and placements here in downtown Bath. So one of the solutions for the business district that we'd like you to consider is stop contracting with the business district for housing of transient placement parolees. I know it's a state program. The state may coordinate this program, but I think with the county's persuasion, perhaps we can keep these placements out of the business district. We're asking that you consider funding a foot patrol during business hours to prevent loitering and harassments. And finally, we're asking to relocate the bus stop from downtown municipal parking lot to the outskirts of the village. We all know that we've had parolees placed in Bath from Yates County, Chemung County. And with my friends in Yates County, they laugh saying that they don't have the hotel space, but the rumor, the image, or the facts are that Steuben County does have a lot of hotel and vacancy for parolees. So we send them there. The next page, the mental health office. Obviously, loitering in front of the mental health office has become a huge challenge. Again, the nicer the weather gets, the bigger the challenge. And it's hard to have a business in this economy as it is, but to think of a business that sits next to the largest mental health office in all of Steuben County is even more challenging. I had my daughter downtown on a Saturday morning, and there was an individual client of the mental health office building. It was obviously closed. And we were at the post office, and they were going from the mental health office building to the post office door, pulling on the doors, tapping on their head, and she wouldn't get out of the car. Now, I know a lot of you in this room do not live here in Bath. You may not even walk the streets of Bath or been to the village hall into the police department like I am almost weekly and watch these arrests take place. But to sit back and think that this is not a significant problem is totally false. It's a significant problem to the people that live here in this community. And it's not the people in this community that we're arresting. It's not the people that live in Haverling Street, Roby Street, their house owners, the taxpayers, the people that are working. It's people normally that are on DSS who are placed here by the county that we're having our biggest challenges from. There's no security in the mental health office building, which is beyond my comprehension. I know when we did this report last year, similar time frame, through 6 months, there were 20 calls to the mental health building that we responded to. We all know about the bomb threat where the FBI was called in. It was fake, but it was a bomb threat nonetheless. So we're asking that you move mental health offices to the county building where there's plenty of security, or hire a security guard that during business hours will prevent loitering. And perhaps look at moving the entrance to the rear of the building to keep the people to congregate out back. Mm-hmm. The next slide shows the loitering in front of the mental health office building that we're referencing. There's 8 or 9 people there. Some days it's up as high as 20. And then finally, the crimes from the DSS recipients. We tracked the data, 33%. They self-reported. Nearly all 100% of repeat arrests are DSS or mental health. And we understand that mental health is not a problem that even the county can deal with. These individuals have been lost through the system through federal changes in regulations, state changes in regulations, with institutions closing all over the state. They're forced out on our streets and our parks and in front of our businesses. It's a challenge, but we have to do something about it. People that want to live in peace, people that want to visit these businesses in downtown Bath should have that right to do so as well. Some of the major examples, and the problem we have in Bath is when I was elected, we want to change the image. We don't want people have to move out of this community because it's crime ridden. And every time there's a story in the news that brings up the village of Bath, then that's just negative for the direction we're trying to go. We remember the individual that was at the Super 8 motel that stole the truck with the gun, had the high-speed chase. They were a placement, or what we are referring to as couch surfing. Some of these people who have fallen through the cracks, who can't get government assistance, are now couch surfing with these individuals who can get government assistance. They're letting them stay on their couches, and they're creating crimes here in the village. Last year, we had one of the marshals most wanted in New York State pulled out of the old National Hotel. The kidnapping individual was a DSS placement who took the 8-year-old or 10-year-old boy to Washington, D.C. We had a murder be released and housed at the budget inn, which that's the state law. There's not much we're going to do about that. But we need to really think about where we're trying to put these people and where we can house them. And then Myers IV, RV, an individual that was placed here in the village, stole an RV and decided to drive around the parking lot all night long. We're just pointing out the facts. If you turn the next couple pages, there's some of the most notorious police reports and what has happened. But if you go to the third, where these images, and I apologize, they're small. We do have this electronically and we can send it to you. But we're doing a number of things in the village to try to combat this on our own. We've invested in a canine unit. We've had record drug busts. In fact, it was the largest drug bust, I think, ever in the village, one of his first hits. We've invested $75,000 in cameras in the downtown district where we're able to solve a rape almost immediately because of the technology we put in Pulteney Park to try to identify these people that are harassing others. We have bike patrols. We have more training, particularly in mental health. And what we did, referring to that third page I had, is called the Operation Quality of Life. So once a month, we're going to try to, unannounced on a Friday night, probably when the downtown business district is busy, we're going to bring in more additional staff and we're going to clamp down on people. The point I'm trying to make out on the pages you can't really read, I think 90% of the people arrested that night were DSS placements. 90% of the people. So we have a problem. We're asking for your help. We've given you ideas and solutions to think about. And at this point, I'll take any questions that you might have. No questions?
I guess we have no questions. I think we need to sit and have time to digest what you're Absolutely. Talking about here and maybe do something, a special meeting at some point internally, and then have you back and we'll discuss the situation.
Perfect.
But, okay.
Appreciate you your time.
Yep. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks.
Kristen?
Hi, how are you? This is Lindsay. She is our EV safety person. As you know, we put on a class for EV cars and how to deal with them. We have a board up here kind of our services. I'll leave it in Scott's office and come grab it another day. I got to talk to him, but here's Lindsay.
Hello. So according to Charge New York, as of May 2nd, when they updated the registered vehicles in Steuben County, we currently have 382 that reside in our county. And we also have charging stations that are located along I-86 and 390. So those are going to be the future corridors that they're trying to make, that there's a charging station every 50 miles. And the charging station themselves, we have 15 currently in our area in the county. And they have multiple plugs, so they can charge multiple cars as they're traveling through. So the 382 that we have here doesn't account for any of the cars that are traveling those corridors or anywhere in our county. So if these cars were to catch fire in our county or begin to off gas, which is what we see when they first start, before they catch the fire, is there are dangerous fumes that are coming off of these cars as the batteries are venting to try and cool themselves off. It does look like steam, but it doesn't dissipate. So it is like a white smoke that we'll start to see, and it smells like sweet cherry bubble gum. And so we've been told. We haven't had the experience yet, but that is what we've been told to smell for. If you smell it, like, you got to get 70 feet out of the area and you should be seen by a doctor due to that chemical exposure. And then any sounds associated with it, such as like popping, arcing, hissing, are also all coming from that battery that is underneath the belly of the car. So it goes from the front wheels to the back wheels and all along throughout the underneath of the car. They're little batteries that are bigger than a AA battery. There are at least 6,000 to 7,000 batteries that are located underneath these electric vehicles that are traveling through our county. And so if one is to ignite, there has to be proper training in place to handle them, especially correctly. So right now, a lot of the places are telling us to just let the car burn, because if you are putting the fire out, you're using tens of thousands of gallons of water that might not be available in certain locations. So if you don't have a fire hydrant nearby or a way to bring consistent water to keep pumping on these vehicles, they're just going to continue burning. If by chance it does get put out and it still has in thermal runaway or having a thermal event, so it's about to have a fire again, or it's just very hot and overheating, the fire departments have to monitor the cars for 1 hour before we are able to take them away because of the risk of another thermal event, so another fire happening or another dangerous situation that could happen as we're loading the car or as we're towing it. So if it happens somewhere, wherever we're towing it from to our lot, it could catch fire again if it's not properly monitored, as well as it can reignite for up to 45 days, no matter where it's sitting. We've been in contact with the ESA, the Energy Security Agency, and they will help provide risk assessments for when an electric car is in an accident. Any accident that is in, such as running over a piece of debris in the road, can puncture that battery and cause one of these thermal events to happen. Electric vehicles do contain less fluids than a normal car does, but they still have some that will leak out, such as coolant, electrolytes that are part of the battery, windshield washer fluid, brake fluid, and there is oil in some of the moving parts just to keep them lubricated. So they will need to be cleaned up as well and properly handled when the fire is put out, or if you're putting water on that car, we need to be aware of the runoff that's happening from these. As well as there's been some studies done for when they are putting out electric cars and the water that's running off of them. There are heavy metals in that water and harmful pollutants that we need to be aware of for putting these out. And that's why they're saying if you let them burn, you don't have the runoff that is causing the heavy metals and all the other pollutants to go into the soil or possible waterways if they're not aware. And it prevents it from reigniting, whether it's in that same location, whether it's on a rollback or in a lot somewhere. And we have to provide special bunkers to put the cars in as well, in case they are to catch fire on our lots, because they can cause a domino effect of igniting cars that are located on our lots.
So could I ask you, when there's one of these fires, I'm assuming it pretty much destroys the whole car.
It does. It destroys the whole car, and they burn so hot that it could even damage the roads because of how much heat those batteries are putting off when they burn.
One of the things we're doing on my side with my team is putting a special EV box together. It's the only place in Steuben County that electric car catches on fire. We'll be having a container come out, pull by winch or shove by skid steer into a roll-off can that will have a sealable door. The fire department can give us a little bit of water. That way we can get it cleared off the highway, get it out of a village, city, somebody's front doorstep in front of their house, and get it to our yard where we put the bunkers. We don't want to put it on a $200,000 rollback, start down the highway with wind, and then not have a fire department come out, and next thing you know, we got a truck burned up. So we have roll-off cans being built specifically, thicker wall, thicker floor, to put these cars in. And with Lindsay, we're going to market it four counties that we do business in on rotation, being PA, New York, that we'll have these cans. So when we have this issue, we can stuff a car in a can, get it gone, get the freeway open, get a city street open, some residential area where it's in somebody's front doorstep at 2 a.m, it's just charging and it catches on fire. We can get it gone instead of having water go all over the place and then have to do a dig up cleanup job, cost more money.
So to date, have we had any fires in Steuben County? Did I hear you say none at this point?
None at this point.
Yeah, none at this point that we've heard.
So has there been fires, these electric fires, in other parts of the surrounding counties?
Yes.
Yes.
But we've had some on 99 in the corridor. And some of the chiefs I've talked to, you know, they're asking what to do at the class we had. Well, what do I do? Leave a snowplow on an old pickup truck year round. I get there before the fire department or with the fire department, shove it off the edge of the road and let it burn so we don't destroy the blacktop or the concrete on an interstate. Just sit there and maintain, make sure we don't have a brush fire. There's a lot of questions to be brought up about it.
So water, if you were to absolutely submerge the car, does water actually put it out, or is there, have they come up with any other type of chemical that will?
And foam will not. 6% on foam. A lot of departments don't have enough water. So if you got 10, 15,000 gallons at 6% on your nozzle on your foam, you're suffocating it down, but you're not taking care of the problem.
Yeah. I mean,
buying you 20 minutes, half hour, of course, you want to come, you know,
start. So you read about fires from even these EV bikes,
yes,
or the scooters that kids have. I have friends that have these. I mean, they're idiots for owning them, but they have them and they're parked in their garages plugged in. And that really becomes a problem that if one of those lights up, it takes the house with it.
So the federal law by 2035, 60% of the vehicles in the United States need to be electric. That's federal law.
And we don't have a grid to support that.
That's right. And so Ithaca just got 10 electric buses. They also got some grant money from the federal government to help their infrastructure. So that's something eventually it's going to come to Ben. Hey, we want you to have buses, but Ben's going to say, we don't have the infrastructure for electric.
Right.
Well, government's going to say, all right, we'll give you
XYZ.
Yeah. $2-4 million to help upgrade the electric system to a bus garage because they're pushing all these.
Hilda.
So if you have almost, we have almost 400 EVs registered in the county, but we have no idea what's coming through the throughways or our highways.
If you think about it today, when you're driving a highway, just look at the cars around you. We don't think about it. We do a track trailer crash. Next thing you know, you see all these same company. Same, I travel back and forth my shops on the interstate. I see all these electric cars, and some of them you don't even know they're electric. They're just grocery getter mom vans, and you look at the back and they're hybrid. And there's a lot of them running from New York City to Canada because they're running up to the falls on vacation. They're running the major corridors and a simple accident. Now you got.
Or they're parked at the museum charging.
Exactly.
CMOG lot.
Yep.
So your count of registered in Steuben County are the total electric cars. That's not including the hybrids, correct?
That is including hybrids.
That is including hybrids?
Yes.
Okay. Not counting the registered vehicles, but unregistered.
Right.
Which is the other electric.
But it doesn't include the hybrids. It's not just the total electrics.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I just want to say that I agree with these guys 100% with the Dunkin' Donuts down there in
Cooper's.
And yeah, between Cooper's and Painted Post, they're getting off the highway there all day long, you know, to charge because you have two interstates that come together. So even though there's 300 and something, like they're saying, there's thousands that are charging because those things are always full.
These cars stop on a highway, we had one last fall on CC's Bridge. We had three troopers help protect. And a car stop. You just can't go to these cars, grab them, drag them on a deck, and go. There is a list of protocol. And if you turn the wheels and they're not in a tow mode, you're generating electric backwards on these cars, which
can overcharge the batteries and
charge it, cause a lot of damage, which then again, everybody's looking for the fallout person, which comes back in a tow company. Hey, now we got to replace a $5,000, $10,000 part on this car. So getting them off the highway is going to take more time. You've got to have four wheels up off the ground, special equipment more. Some of the cars, when they're out electric, you can't even open the tablet on the dash or the glove box to get anything to work, to get it in tow mode. They're bricked out, yes. When they're bricked out, they're basically, you come in a little wrecker, maybe grab the front wheels, and then put dollies on your rear wheels because dragging them up on a roll-off truck, rollback truck, now you're turning wheels. You're going to cause problems. And then you get to a charging station with these folks that some of them don't understand EVs, some do. You get to Dunkin' Donuts, and there's already six of them being charged. Now we got to sit there for an hour or two on our deck waiting to where we can get this car slid down in front of a charging station so the cord will reach it. So now we have a truck tied up for an hour or two while everybody else is sitting there and they're getting charged.
Well, I think we should thank you for being proactive in developing these containers, which I think will be a big help.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
We don't see it here because we're more country, but we have 22 towing companies in our captive insurance, and a lot of them are in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, all the way down to Florida. They already have a problem with them. They already have a big lot that they've had to go buy to set these cars separately. It's coming. It's to Bend County. Just we're a little slower because we're more out of country.
Okay, Hilda.
So you had a class last month or whatever, and somebody from another company comes and talks about how to take care of these. You've got another class coming, right?
Yes, we're trying to plan it for the end of August. So they're the Energy Security Agency, the ESA that I talked about, that also does our risk assessments when we do come upon a car that has been crashed. They come out and they provide a full day. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning and it goes till 5-6 o'clock at night with all the information that they can provide to us on the batteries, the safety, if there's a fire, everything that we should know on how to properly handle them.
So who's invited to this class? The fire companies and the other towing companies sitting out there within the county are invited?
Yep.
Fire. So the first one, what was the participation like in the first?
Oh gosh, there was 42 of us.
Yeah, 42. So it costs $250 per person. None of that B&W makes some money on. We supply the cars. It's for them to fly their people out to us to do the class. And some of the fire departments said, oh, that's too much money. And some of them were like, okay. So we had a lot of small departments. We Horn had became, some.
Right? Hornby came?
Hornby came. Caton came. Nelson. Lawrenceville.
The sheriff sent somebody?
Sheriff did send somebody. Yes, ma'am. But none of the big ones, the city, Gang Mills, Painted Post, Bath, Hornell, none of the major, bigger fire departments on the major corridor had anybody there. And that's where you're going to see it probably more likely is on the major corridor. And Lindsay's been going around talking to dealerships. What you talking, what you're doing?
I'm trying to talk to the local car dealerships because they are the ones selling the electric vehicles in our area. To see if they're able to sponsor some spots for our local volunteer fire departments. That way, if they are low on money or don't have the budget for this one class, we can at least get them one spot so they are able to attend. And one person out of their company can understand how to properly handle an electric vehicle if they are to come upon one that has been off-gassing or is in a fire or an accident.
And they can take it back to their department and, you know, spread it. So
the simplest thing is electric car. Is a call comes in, somebody's hunched over the steering wheel. The fire department shows up. Car's not an accident. Car's not compromised or anything. The guy's hunched over the steering wheel because maybe having a heart condition or a stroke or something. The fire department guys are all walking around it. This person comes together. They're on the throttle pedal. They're going to run over people in front of them. These electric cars are not going to stop. So that's where the fire departments need to be trained is the first thing on any EV car, they must chalk the wheels. If the car feels the wheels are chalked, it will not move. Okay. Otherwise, AMR up front, they pull right up front, back up. They're getting their thing out, getting the guy ready to come out of the car, and all of a sudden he comes to and just stretches out, hits the throttle pedal. He's going to mow over, buddy. So $250 to teach people versus a comp claim or somebody's leg broke.
Killed. Does anybody have any questions? We need to cut this off at this point, but we thank you for coming, and I'm sure we're going to have major problems within this county as time goes by and more cars are put on, electric cars are put on the road. So, but
thank you for having us.
Thank you. I guess I'm glad I don't own an electric car.
I'm going to make the repo business really
interesting.
Yes. Brooks, are you here? You're up. I have one question for you before you get started. When we did the interviews with the interns, one of the interns was questioning the youth court. I thought we had one established at some point in Hornell. What where is that at this point?
You know, I'll have to talk to the city court judge. I know that we did have one established. One of our ADAs was assisting with, they had actually built it into the curriculum at Hornell High School. But I don't know where that stands right now, to be frank with you. I know during COVID, when the courts closed, they stopped bringing them into court and they had to stop doing it. I'm not sure if they've been able to start it back up again or not. That was a, it was a pretty big lift for the Hornell City School District. So I'll have to check with them and see where they are.
Did you find out?
Yes, I will. Yep.
Appreciate it. Okay.
All right. So we have a number of things here. The first item is a contract for services to maintain vehicle traffic matters for local courts and the traffic diversion program. The way our traffic diversion program works currently is that someone makes an application to be accepted to the program. I've got a set of guidelines based upon the nature of the ticket and their history. And Noel applies those guidelines and says they get in or they don't get in. If there's a question, it's a gray area, he calls me or another senior ADA, and we make that call. That last year, I think we talked about during the budget process, that's taken basically almost a full day of Noel's time. Right now, I think it's his Sundays because he doesn't have a time during the week. When we looked at reassessing our responsibilities, that was one of the things that Mike Rathman said we need to find something different to do with and get that off of his plate. We talked about some stipending stuff and that wasn't possible. So this is a fix to that. We have my proposal is to contract with, I'm going to use actually Tim Roselle is the one who's indicated a desire to do it. Have an ADA, I have an attorney come in. It's got to either be an attorney or somebody in law enforcement who recognizes the numbers and knows the vehicle and traffic code to do this job. But to come in under contract to do all of that work, if it happens to be an attorney, then what I can do is also have them do the speeding offers for any tickets that do not get into the program. If somebody doesn't get in, we then refer it off to an ADA and they would make an offer. If we use an attorney in this situation, which I intend to do, those offers will be made right there. They'll be in economies of scale and will be more efficient. So what I'm asking to do is contract with an attorney, with Tim Roselle, for $20,000 a year, paid for our traffic diversion funds to do this piece of our, to do the screening part for our traffic diversion program.
So Tim is a, works for the county? Is he?
Yeah, Tim was a former ADA. He resigned and is now a part-time city attorney in the city of Hornell and a private attorney. So we would simply just contract with him. Again, just as a pure contract, here's what we pay you for the year, and no benefits, and no retirement time, none of that stuff, just a net charge, which would go against traffic diversion to cover this piece.
Would he be doing that at his office in Hornell? Or?
Yes. Yeah, he won't. He will not have an office here. He won't be. There is. We do have a clerical person who does all of that offer stuff for us already. So there's no need. He just refer that to that person.
So
how much are we paying this guy?
$20,000 is what I propose. We were paying him $50 for 2.5 days as an ADA. So this is a 1 day a week. So it comes out to $20.
I guess the question is, where does that leave the driver diversion program money-wise?
Well, that I can...
distribution, so do we have a report on that?
Yep, Noel can talk to you about that.
I had an annual report I was going to submit to you today, too, as well. Unfortunately, my USB won't let me download a program, but I do have the numbers. So, but I'll get the annual report out to you by next Monday, if that's okay.
And then just show what...
Yep.
Bottom line would be using the $20,000 out of that diversion money.
Yes, sir.
Contract.
It'll show, I didn't mean to interrupt. It'll show what we've paid out to the municipalities as well as where we would stand with the $20,000 being paid out. There is more than enough money to pay Attorney Roselle to aid in assisting the program and the traffic. Currently, right now, the remaining balance that we have left over, from 2022, because this was a topic that was brought up last year in regards to the remaining balance that we used to help offset some vehicles purchased for the county for emergency services and law enforcement. we have a remaining balance of $362,978. It's from the 2022 year. So, and if you minus the $35,000 that we would award, that was set up, established per the year to send towards law enforcement, we have a remaining balance of $327,978 and some change from 2022.
So this is going to free up some of your time sitting out there. Are you still going to oversee the diversion program or is?
Yes, sir. As I spoke with District Attorney Baker, I spend a minimum of at least 1 hour a day reviewing applications to an hour and a half a day answering emails and doing administrative duties.
So Tim would be taking care of that portion for you.
He would be doing the reviewing and some of the administrative. I still would oversee and coordinate it. He would help with the backside of it in regards to the review of the tickets that aren't in diversion that go to that go for non-diversion plea offers, questions that arise between attorneys and courts, and also helping me with the review of the applications. I would still do the annual reports, the quarterly reports for the county.
Anybody on the committee? Steve, you have a question?
Yeah, I think it's for Jen more than the minutes. Is
microphone?
I kind of brought this up before in other contexts. Do you see any problem with there being a city attorney handling not criminal matters, but handling matters that deal with violations of the law in which the city police or something may also be involved?
It could be, but the real issue presently is that because he's not going to be a county employee, it's a professional service, so it has to go through procurement.
And so, Brooks and I talked about that, and we discussed, options of being able to secure these types of services. And I suggested a contract instead of a temp hire because it's more than temporary. But if you're comfortable with the concept, what we can do is we can bring it back at a special meeting prior to your board meeting once we talk to Andy on the procurement, or talk to Nate on, the employment side. So
I'd just like to see a 1 year contract to see how this goes.
It'd be 1 year with the option to renew if we did an RFP. Yep. And we could get an RFP done relatively quickly if that's the way you wanted to do it.
We should to see if others are out there interested in it.
Okay. So do I have a motion to do an RFP sitting out there?
So move, Potter.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. So we're going to get a report on the update of the traffic diversion program. You're going to send that out?
Yes, sir. I will have the statistics for the town's payouts and what we have remainder of 2022. Right. And then also in the cost offset for the contract services.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So are we on number three now?
We are on number three. I have one quick question about the RFP process, because part of what this person is going to do is to act as an ADA and make offers. I have some concerns about the idea that it could be somebody who I neither know nor trust in that position.
So we'll work with you, and we'll work with Andy on how to craft that, because you can set, you can certainly set requirements within the RFP, but again, we could also, and we'll issue the RFP, but there are certain requirements that you can put in there to narrow it.
Sure. I mean, I just want to make sure that's something we can do. So, all right. We have two grants we're looking to accept. There's it's the CARP grant, which we have been several years. This is our SWIFT program. Well, you have the numbers on that.
I was fortunate enough to secure this grant, and it's going to be, a 3-year cycle. It's still up in the air, but they did give us a swing year is what I would call it. And it's for $40,000 and $400. We use this to offset the investigators' costs at DSS in regards to the welfare fraud. The sheriff's office has two part-time investigators that work with the welfare fraud task force. And this offsets those costs there.
This is just to accepting this grant. Okay, yep. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion.
And the second is a domestic violence program grant of $8,000. Obviously, we prosecute a number of domestic violence cases that we don't have a specific earmark for. This was sort of a surprise to get, so we will certainly find a good use for it. But it's $8,000. We're asking to accept it.
Motion, Jeff. Second, Hannah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sheriff.
Morning.
Morning.
Item number one, accept the state alien or criminal alien assistance program. That's not to house anybody here in Steuben County. That's for in the jail when we house folks that the federal government brings to us. So that's in the amount of $3,890.
So
several
routine.
Yes. Yeah. It's a yearly.
Do you have a second?
Second, Potter.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. Second item is accepting. It's called the Walmart Cyber Grant in the amount of $4,000. That's what we use for the Coats for Kids and the Toys for Tots program that we do every December, but they call it a cyber grant for whatever reason.
Motion, Horton. Second.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. So most of the items that we got quotes for last year for the physical plant at the jail rose significantly. And so we're looking to spend from a capital project that we won't be able to finance this year and meet the additional cost on a minor equipment, the water control valves, $5,000, and $6,000 on a major equipment, a mini split in the server room, which keeps the servers and the backup servers for the county cool enough to operate. And then we'll come back to you at budget time on the HVAC Johnson Control upgrade. It's almost doubled in cost.
What's the total of these two items? What was the total? 11,000. The total of the two items that you're...
11,000. Yeah.
And this is to come out of capital project? Or is there...
So it would be spending from the capital project. So $5,000 for water control valves, $6,000 for the mini splits. And then...
Doing this because there's not enough in your budget. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Correct. And those projects... In speaking with the sheriff, would be good to finish up this year. The full controls that we were looking at, we're likely to, again, budget more and likely ask for permission to get design. It looked like the Gordian process that we used through Danforth, this project might be outstripping the size of that. So we likely, it's not a big engineering job, but we likely will need engineers to come in, do the specs, and then put that out to bid probably next year.
So in the capital project fund at this point, we still have a balance, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything major for the rest of this year we need to take out of that you're aware of?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm aware of.
It'd be adding two for next year.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Motion, Horton. Second, Hannah.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I have a question for the sheriff and the district attorney. I know there was legislation included in this year's state budget to deal with the sticker stores. When can we start enforcing that?
We can't. We can only enforce it in conjunction with the Cannabis Control Board. They retain all jurisdiction over those. We can partner with them, but we can't do it separately from
them. Well, things are going to pretty much go on as they've been going on.
They have very, very few enforcement agents statewide. Each time we talk to them.
74 is what I was told, that they're going to have 74 between New York City, Albany, and Buffalo.
And there you go. Yeah, we're not going to see them here.
No, unless they're lost.
Hilda?
I was on a Zoom conference with the control board, and I offered to FaceTime our sticker stores to their agents. I offered to video. I offered to do anything we can do to assist them, and they said they'd get back to me.
That's where we're at. Back to square one.
Thank you for the update.
Yeah.
Noel?
Just really quick, that CARP grant that we just applied for that came for, that is a big portion in regards to cigarette tax and alcohol tax. And I had a long conversation, and the gentleman's name will remain nameless, but he was with tax and finance. And he said, because I was hoping to attack that on that end to help with the sticker shop stuff. And he says on the tax and finance side of it in New York State, that's even a bigger mess than the legislative law. And he does not see anything getting fixed on their side of it to do the tax and finance end of it enforcement. Because I was hoping to really build off that grant. So just to let you know.
I didn't know if now was an appropriate time to ask about the incident cap and what the update was on what we're doing about that. Yeah, anyone want to comment on what happened at the arraignment court?
I can't remember the date now, but at the end of May, we had an inmate who was a career criminal. He's actually a persistent felony offender eligible, which means he was looking at 25 years to life. He was being arraigned. He was unruly and went after one of our assistant district attorneys and injured her in the process. She suffered a concussion, and Jim's people were very quick. Got him off of her very quickly and resolved the situation. But it did make very poignant some issues we have been discussing with CAP for a long time. And so we have made some changes. Jim can talk about the security piece, but I will tell you the OCA was great. We met. That happened on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
It was Saturday night. Mm-hmm. We were on the chief judge from Judge Taylor was on the phone with us on Sunday. And we had a meeting on Monday, including Sean, the public defender's office. The county attorney was present, as well as OCA. And a number of recommendations were made, and Jim's put those into practice. One of those recommendations was that we got approval to send members of my office are going to appear virtually from now on. OCA came down and put the equipment in so that we'll appear as a face on a computer screen as opposed to live, just to remove some of one more person from the courtroom. So long as we are effective, we will continue that. If it appears we are not being effective in the room, then we'll have to put our people back in. But that's one of the things, and Jim can talk about the others, because I think there were some great suggestions he made that will increase security dramatically.
So we moved the layout of the room so that the inmate doesn't cross behind the public defender or the ADA. We're shackling and handcuffing anyone except for a pregnant person or a recently delivered female when they arrive into CAP. And we're going to meet with the Magistrates Association to deliver some situational awareness training for folks. We've done, I think it's over 4,500 CAP arraignments since that's been up and running. This is the first incident we've had. I say that it is the safest courtroom in Steuben County, and I still say that. But I think that, and I've offered to Sean and to Brooks both too, we get so many new attorneys in that sometimes maybe they don't realize how dangerous the people are in the room with them, that I think we're missing the boat by not doing better training, situationally awareness training for those folks. I think that'll help significantly also. But the correction officer reacted very quickly, very well. And we're very fortunate that it becomes an incident that we can all learn from and move forward with.
Jeff, you're also going to screen them.
Pardon?
You're going to screen folks.
Yes. There's a screening process too. If the correction officers determine that someone poses a threat due to their screening, there's going to be additional security folks in that room.
Or we'll push the arraignment to one more session and give them 12 hours to calm down or sober up.
Yeah.
I have two points. My wife is one of them that does a ton of those arraignments, and she says that those guards are spot on. So congratulate to all of them for they'll even offer to walk them to their cars. The second question was, what would it be possible to ever do what they did during COVID, where the whole thing was virtual? So I mean, even Sean's people or nobody has.
That's what we've all been pushing for.
Okay. We had a change in state law to make that possible. Phil Pomisano and Senator O'Meara put that together for us. And so they changed the state law to make that possible. We are at the point where all parties have to agree at this stage. And Indigent Legal Services, who is sort of the holder of our grant that Sean has to answer to, has indicated that if they agree to that piece, then that puts our grant in danger, and that's $6 million. So we're sort of being held hostage again by folks in Albany, even though we changed a law to make it possible. So okay. I think unless and until ILS changes their mind, we're not going to be able to do that.
Okay, thanks.
So, Sheriff, you had
I think you had mentioned in an email of a portable holding cell.
Yeah, OCA said no way, no how. Yeah.
So really, this same risk is present in any courtroom we have, right?
Yeah.
Everything is wide open. They can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The thing that makes this different is they're all first arraignments or first appearances. And a lot of them are still under the influence of whatever got them there to begin with. That's what makes CAP different is the, it's not, okay, come back in 3 weeks and see us. It's they're taken into custody and it's within 12 hours when they see the judge. So it definitely adds a different flavor to it. But yeah, we even looked at a portable cell on wheels that we could use and OCA said, absolutely not. Don't even think about it.
That answer your question.
They've already vetoed stun belts. So.
Yeah.
Good question.
Carol?
Do we have a program that will help the town courts to be aware of some of these situations?
So the magistrates meet monthly and it's either every month or every other month. And Captain Mills from our jail is on that group. So he's putting together a training for them. He's already talked to Ms. Pirro, who runs from Rochester, and we're going to offer that training to them so that we can make sure that they not just situational awareness, but also physical security for their, because a lot of the towns don't have security in their town courts. There's quite probably the majority do not have any security.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
While I'm standing here, can I go back to when I was up here before and accepting the domestic violence grant? It's $6,000, not $8,000. I misread. I apologize. So I'd like to ask to amend that request to accept a $6,000 grant, not an $8,000 grant.
Come on now.
I just lost $2,000 in children. Up out
of your salary. Okay, thank you.
Thanks. All good?
Yeah, we're all good. Okay. Yeah, Ken. Tim, Ken. Tim and Ken.
Good morning. First, I have an item. It's the accept the proposal from Motorola in the amount of $345,000 for the equipment and install of the Pinnacle Tower site equipment. This will be grant funded.
When?
When?
Yeah.
As soon as I can get the equipment here and get it installed, it'll be done. So I don't have a time frame because we have to accept the proposal first. So
moved.
Second. Potter.
Discussion? Kelly?
When I was reading through that proposal, it stated that, and forgive me if I misquote, it was saying that one of our programs or something is not supported anymore. And we have to do some special things and some special equipment because it's not supported. And what are we doing about that?
So we acquired some additional equipment that operates on the current platform that we work from. So Tompkins County has recently done a replacement of their equipment. We acquired some equipment from Tompkins County to be able to put this site online on our current version. The new grant, the $5,800,000 grant will actually be the grant that'll upgrade our equipment to the latest version.
And what's the time frame on that?
That's going to be probably a couple years out.
Okay.
Yep. But we will be able to get Pinnacle online because we did acquire the equipment that is needed there to be able to get Pinnacle online.
Okay. Did I get a motion? Again, second. Did I vote on it yet?
Uh-huh.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Next item, authorization to put out to bid for DC power plant purchase and installation. This is for our tower sites. Our current DC power plants that are there are old. We can't get parts for them anymore, and they're a little bit undersized. So with the recent changes and things that we're looking at, we'd like to upgrade that equipment. So we'd like to put that out to bid. Motorola did provide us with a proposal. We feel that we can get a better price by putting that out to bid.
And what was their proposal?
It was over $1 million.
Yeah. Okay, so a motion to put this out to bid?
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion? Fred?
So you have both AC and DC power.
That's correct. Powers. Yes, that's correct. So we have to basically, some of the equipment has to go to DC to be able to be powered when we lose power before the generator comes up and switches it back.
Gotcha. Yep. Thank you.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
The only other item I just add, we do have an EV lithium ion battery class that we have scheduled for July. This is Office of State Fire Prevention and Control. This is a new course that they're offering. We've been waiting for them to roll this out. We were waiting on the instructor development for their instructors to be able to do this class. So we have one that'll be scheduled for July. We're just waiting on approval of the location. It'll probably be in the Corning area at this point. This will be a free 3 to 4 hour course that OFPC is providing for fire, police, and EMS.
Thank you.
Yep.
So is B&W aware of this program? Is it in conflict with theirs?
No, it's not a conflict. It'd be an addition. This is a more of an awareness level, where their course is probably more detailed for, operations completely on the operations on the scene. This is an awareness level course. Thanks. So it's for the general firefighter right on up through the fire chief.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks, Tim.
Sure.
Nate.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. One request for you today in conjunction with the sheriff here. As you know, we've been doing a lot of things to try and help recruitment, and this is one of those. Currently in the deputy sheriff's union contract, our lateral transfer section allows for us to bring people in at a higher step based on their years of service if they were, and currently it's split out in two directions. So the first is if they were a employee of ours previously in the sheriff's department, we can give them, we can put them at a step based on year for year of their police service. If they're a lateral transfer coming in from another department and have never worked for us before, it takes 2 years to get that 1 year of a step. And we're finding that we're not able to bring these folks in, at obviously a much lower step than we would people if they had just worked for us before. So what we're looking to do is do a memorandum of agreement with the Deputies Association to allow lateral transfers to come in on a year-for-year basis to move up the steps, and not have it. It's currently also capped at a max of step 5 in that section where they haven't worked for us before, but to not cap it at year 5. So it's a year for year, move up the steps.
And I, the only thing I would add to this is due to our current status of contract negotiations, this is particularly important because where we can bring lateral transfers in with that cap right now is essentially 3 years old. So we are not able to, the sheriff is not able, we are not able to recruit at appropriate salaries. We obviously want that grid updated, but the process is what the process is. So this will help not just in the long run, but in the short run too.
Yeah. And quite frankly, right now, I mean, as far as some of these lateral transfers, I think we've missed out on a few good ones because we weren't able to move them up the grid, you know, where they would need to be able to transfer. So
who reviews each of these potential candidates?
So it's a significant process. When someone applies, they go through a background investigation, a psychological evaluation, a polygraph evaluation. We have to, by law, check the certification, decertification list with both state and federal. All of that goes through. Then it goes to personnel, and they also check the validity of their status, if they're actually full or part-time, if they're competitively appointed, if they've had their medical, all of the stuff that he would do with a new hire. They also have to have all of that. I will also throw in that for every lateral transfer we get in, we save over $50,000 on training costs. And you also have the benefit of their experience and knowledge and training they've received other places. So it works well.
Do we know what other counties do? I mean, do they do a one-for-one match?
Most do, yes. Yeah. This is something that, you know, has kind of hung around. Again, we'd been talking about this for a while, although we had been pretty lucky either getting folks that had worked for us before or having good people, you know, already here off the list. And now with the recruitment difficulties now, we're looking to kind of make it like everyone else. And again, there's no way to compete on the outside with this. Like Jack said, mm-hmm. even, you know, it's a 3-year-old, you know, mid-grade step rather than a higher one. We're not going to get those folks.
Okay. I'll make the motion, Horton.
Second, Potter.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Can I ask one question, please? We talked about this earlier this year, where a person who applied to become a CO had to go through all the things you just referenced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cost to an applicant to do those. Yes.
So
is that prohibitive, and should we be looking at paying for those?
The only cost they have now for the CO is the 110 psychological, and we reached an agreement with the state where we can do the criminal history through our fingerprinting system now. So there's no cost with that. I think that we should reimburse that when they get hired.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea. It's going
to
help.
Is that part of a union contract that we would have to change?
Don't think so.
I don't think on that one, no, because we do it with the drug testing as well. I think mm-hmm. you can refund it if you want.
I mean, I personally think we should be doing that. If we're hiring them, we should. It shouldn't cost them to come to work for us.
Well, and it was used as a in the years when we had 30 people applying
right.
all the time. It was a great addition to the selection process. Was unless do you really want to come to work truthful here? With us,
yeah,
you know, don't pay that money. And that worked to our advantage, but now we're not in that. That's not where the world is anymore. So I agree, we should be reimbursing those.
Can we look at changing that?
Yeah, we'll talk with the county attorney to see if that's, you know, what we need to do, if that's just an administrative process on our end that we can change, or if we need authorizations or, but yeah, absolutely.
Okay. As long as the auditor will pay.
that's so we'll talk to the auditor too. Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Thank right. you.
Yes.
Deck. Sure, why not?
Okay. Just the only thing, just a quick update on where we're at with EMS. So we've been meeting. We're about ready this week to issue the RFP. That you folks have authorized. We've been working internally. Tim found some good examples from other communities, and also the attorney that we have on retainer who specializes in these has reviewed them, and just last week got us his revisions. So we'll get that out. We actually received, after a slow start, we've received a dozen or so applicants for the EMS coordinator position, which we're very pleased. And there are more than a few that are well qualified. So interviews, Tim, maybe Kenny and Chris are going to do the interviews, and that'll start here within the next week or two. So we're making good progress on that front. And then also committee chair, we had a meeting with CSS Workforce New York, and we're having follow-up meetings with BOCES and Corning Community College and CSS Workforce about how to leverage programs that they have or that they are looking at expanding, and also federal training dollars. That's only available to individuals who are in paid service, but obviously, the goal is to increase the number of people we have in paid service. So we're looking at that. And then also we have the to-do of Mr. Malter's suggestion about training reimbursement. We think that it might be a good carve out because of the leveraging. That might be a good carve out for the volunteer folks, where the paid folks would be able to leverage the federal dollars to incentivize. So just an update. Still working.
Thank you. Anything else? Up for adjournment.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Aye.